Good evening and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report for June 24th, 2016. On today's show, we'll have more from the Moscow Planning and Zoning Commission hearing on the proposed six-acre Identity on Main development at the junction of U.S. Highway 95 and the Troy Highway. But first, this news. Mosier Mayor Arlene Burns has called Union Pacific's decision to resume running oil trains through the Columbia Gorge outrageous. Burns said, "I think it's outrageous that they're telling us it's safe. We are going to keep pushing until we feel that this has been properly addressed." The Federal Railroad Administration released a new report yesterday which faults Union Pacific for the fiery derailment in the town June 3rd. According to the report, the railroad giant is solely responsible for not maintaining the tracks. Union Pacific and the Federal Railroad Administration have both said broken lag bolts caused the derailment. The report also said the broken bolts caused the tracks to widen, which in turn caused the derailment. The derailment forced the closure of Interstate 84, the evacuation of about 100 residents of Mosier, and released 42,000 gallons of Bakken crude oil from North Dakota into the environment, which left an oil sheen on the Columbia River and burned for 14 hours on the tracks before firefighters could extinguish it. There were no injuries. Union Pacific says it will replace the lag bolts, which are only on curved sections of track. On 530 miles of tracks in the 32,000-mile Union Pacific network, Oregon Transportation Department Rail and Public Transit Coordinator Hal Gard said Union Pacific officials told him the railroad will begin replacing lag bolts on their tracks through the Columbia Gorge in August. Union Pacific spokesperson Justin Jacobs said the rail fastening system historically has been safe and they are taking steps to ensure safe tracks. Jacobs said, "Since the June 3rd derailment in Mosier, we are enhancing our regular inspection process as part of our ongoing track renewal program. Lag bolts with this fastener system are being replaced with rail spikes, which provide higher levels of fault detectability in standard inspection processes." Federal Railroad Administration Director Sarah Feinberg said advanced electronic brakes could have reduced the damage caused by the derailment. According to the Associated Press, Feinberg said, "We're talking about upgrading a brake system that is from the Civil War era. It's not too much to ask these companies to improve their braking systems." Union Pacific says upgrading the brakes would not have made a difference in Mosier. The Association of American Railroads has lobbied against mandatory advanced braking systems. The organization says the new brakes are unreliable and do not justify spending $3 billion nationwide. According to the Associated Press, federal officials say putting advanced braking systems only on the locomotives carrying oil or other flammable liquids will cost only $80 million. Union Pacific crews inspected the tracks through the Mosier area in the days before the derailment and failed to notice the broken lag bolts. The inspection was specifically for oil trains. U.S. Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkel of Oregon, along with Governor Kate Brown, have called for a moratorium on oil train shipments through the Columbia River Gorge. Merkel said of the oil train derailment, "They're continuous, they're extremely dangerous, and we're not treating them with the seriousness that they deserve." The Federal Railroad Administration says Union Pacific faces possible penalties for the safety violations. Earlier this week, the Pacific States British Columbia Oil Spill Task Force held their annual meeting in Seattle to update each other on spill response programs and share data. Task Force members said their previous efforts to coordinate and do drill exercises helped them respond more efficiently to the Mosier oil train derailment when it happened. a few months ago, more than a dozen agencies took part in a national oil spill response drill where the scenario was a 100-car unit oil train derailment spilling 450,000 gallons of oil into the Columbia River. The Associated Press reported British Columbia Environment Ministry Deputy Minister Wes Shoemaker said the province successfully used drones to track spilled diesel fuel from a truck crash near Mount Robson National Park. Oregon Department of Environmental Quality Cleanup and Emergency Response Program Manager Bruce Gillis said responders and residents of the Columbia Gorge couldn't have been luckier because the usual strong winds that come through the gorge were not blowing on the afternoon of the Mosier derailment. Four oil train cars caught fire June 3rd, and a quarter square mile of woodlands burned, but officials feel the fire could have been much worse if the wind had been blowing as normal. On most days, the wind is about 25 miles per hour through that section of the gorge. A report says Washington is the number three state for high housing prices, and the highest prices are on the west side. The Seattle Times reports home prices in the Seattle metro area increased 12% in the past year, which is nearly twice as fast as housing prices are rising nationwide. Only Hawaii and California have higher housing prices. The increases are not limited to the Puget Sound area. The newspaper reported 37 out of Washington's 39 counties had housing price increases in the past year. The Seattle Times reported King, Walla Walla, Lincoln, Jefferson, Columbia, Grays Harbor, Mason, Stevens, San Juan, and Wakiakum counties had housing prices increasing 20% or more since January 1st of this year. The paper also said the median resale price for homes increased from $270,000 in early 2015 to $290,000 earlier this year. Wildlife groups have increased the reward for capturing the person responsible for killing wolf pups in a northern Idaho den to $15,000. According to the Associated Press, the U.S. Humane Society and the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust donated $5,000 to the $10,000 put up earlier this week by the Center for Biological Diversity. Idaho Fish and Game says a person or persons removed the pups from their den and killed them sometime in the middle of last month. The agency is asking anyone with information to call the Citizens Against Poaching hotline at 1-800-632-5999. Callers have the option of remaining anonymous. That number again, 800-632-5999. The Washington Investment Board's prepaid tuition program will again begin accepting college savings money from students and families next year. Also about the same time, the state will start taking money for a new plan called the 529 College Savings Plan. The Washington Investment Board met in Olympia Wednesday, where discussion also included a plan to extend the deadline for refunds from the Guaranteed College Education Tuition Program to next year. Washington is one of the few states nationally that runs a prepaid college tuition program, which allows parents of college students to pay tuition in advance as a hedge against increasing tuition costs. However, lawmakers have recently voted to decrease tuition at state colleges and universities in Washington. Last August, the Guaranteed Education Tuition Program stopped taking new payments so the state could start the 529 plan. The College 529 Savings Plan Director, Betty Lochner, said she is optimistic investment management companies will make investment requests. Lochner said, "We're headed in the right direction. The path is looking clear, and we're excited to move forward." The Idaho Republican primary cost taxpayers $1.9 million this year. Legislators agreed to push the event from May to March in 2015, arguing the earlier date would lend more clout to the state during the presidential primary season. Idaho Republican Party Executive Director David Johnson said there was a record voter turnout for the Republican primary, which was won by Ted Cruz, with many of the voters being newly registered Republicans. Idaho's Constitution Party took part in the primary alongside the Republicans, accounting for 500 out of the 222,000 votes cast. Idaho's Democrats did not participate, arguing taxpayers should not be expected to foot the bill for a partisan election, particularly one only open to registered Republicans. Proponents originally estimated holding a separate election would cost around $2 million. Primary expenditures include fees for renting poll sites, poll workers, printing costs for the ballots, and postage. Idaho Democrats held a caucus March 22nd to select a presidential candidate, meaning the party picked up the bill. However, after this year's massive turnout resulted in multi-hour delays and hundreds of people leaving before casting a vote, the Democratic Party is considering switching to a primary process. Bernie Sanders won the Idaho Democratic caucuses with 78% of the vote against Hillary Clinton. The Idaho Community Foundation has awarded two grants to Latah Community Health. The money is to be used for a voucher program designed to supply low-income patients with medication. The two grants are expected to supply 365 vouchers. Patients must make less than 200% of the poverty level and lack insurance that covers prescription drugs. More than half of Latah County's health More than half of Latah Community Health's patients do not have health insurance. Since the clinic opened, access to prescription medication has been a major problem for patients. We now turn to our featured segment. On Wednesday, the Moscow Planning and Zoning Commission voted unanimously to approve a 6-acre high-density planned unit development along U.S. Highway 95, just south of Paradise Creek, and near the intersection with the Troy Highway. If approved by the City Council, the development called Identity on Main would be the largest mixed-use development in Moscow. It would include 154 multifamily residential units and 3,000 square feet of retail space with room for three commercial tenants. The wedge-shaped parcel near the intersection of U.S. Highway 95 and the Troy Highway extends along Paradise Creek, adjacent to Paradise Path, a section of which had been moved north in the area several years ago. The area also used to serve as a railroad corridor and an industrial zone. We now have several excerpts from Wednesday's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting and public hearing on the development, starting with Moscow City Planner Mike Ray.
Looking at the zoning configuration of the property in the area, it's currently comprised of three zoning districts. You have the motor business zone, which encompasses the old Domino's property. You also have general business, which wraps the property frontage on the old railroad property, as well as the Stubbs Seed Warehouse property. And the lighter shade of yellow is R4, which is our multifamily residential zoning district. So taking a look at our bonus density for planned unit developments, if you come in within the base density, then that means you don't need to do any bonus density in order to achieve the number of units that you wish. This project, general business, motor business, and R4, the base density is 24 dwelling units per acre. So we've got about 6 acres in size, which equates to 145 units, which this project is 9 units above the base density. So they'd need a bonus density of to accommodate the 9 units. That equals 7%. Bonus density, and so the applicant's chosen to look at common open space increases as well as landscaping. So within the common open space section, you're able to achieve up to a 10% increase, and then with the landscaping section, you're able to achieve up to a 5% increase. So with the common open space areas, Preservation of riparian areas and pedestrian bicycle paths is one of the items that counts. So the applicant has chosen to utilize this. They're preserving the riparian area between the path and the creek, as well as areas between the path and the buildings. There's at least 10 feet there. And they're also including the landscape plan, which, like I showed you before, includes trees and shrubs on both sides of the path. And in staff's opinion, you know, with a maximum of 15% that could be granted under this bonus density, we feel that at least a 3% bonus density is warranted in staff's opinion. The issues, you know, instead of giving the full 10%, Paradise Path is already has an easement across the property, so it's already dedicated and built. And so that, you know, taking that into consideration, we feel that about 3% would be warranted for the common open space and landscaping. The other aspect of bonus density they've chosen to utilize is sustainable development, which can be awarded up to 15%. Within that section are green building provisions, and the applicant's chosen to utilize a number of those, and I'll just briefly go through those. Proposing ENERGY STAR rated appliances to reduce energy consumption, low water use plumbing fixtures, which reduce water consumption, low E insulated windows, increased wall and attic insulation to reduce reliance on mechanical systems, recycled content building materials, low and no VOC sealants, adhesives, and paints to improve indoor air quality, and additional bicycle parking to reduce reliance on automobiles, high-efficiency HVAC equipment to reduce energy, and it's an infill development location which reduces demands on infrastructure. So given those and the maximum 15%, staff feels at least 4% bonus density is warranted, and with the combination of the common open space and additional landscaping, that would get the applicant up to the 7% that's required to get the 9 additional dwelling units that are proposed. The applicant's also proposing restrictive covenants in the lease agreements for all residents. So they would be just putting them on notice that parking is limited on site, and that unless they choose to rent or lease a space from the developer, then they wouldn't be able to park their car on the premises. And then the developers also provided comparison projects in other markets, which shows substantially less off-street parking than what the City of Moscow requires for multifamily projects. Looking at the bicycle parking a little bit closer, that's one of the major components of their parking mitigation plan. Back in 2011, we had some of you may recall, we tried to require bicycle parking for all commercial and multifamily developments. And so when we were working with the developer on the mitigation plan, we had used a lot of the same information. So as you recall, it had gone to the council level, and it was denied at council, and so it never was passed. And at the time, we had done what we commonly do is research other jurisdictions across the country and in the Northwest and get an average about what the rate of bicycle parking per stall or per dwelling unit, the average of those numbers.
That was Moscow City Planner Mike Ray at Wednesday's Moscow Planning and Zoning Commission. We'll now hear some of the public hearing on the proposal for the 6-acre mixed unit development, starting with Moscow resident Nels Peterson and followed by local realtor Shelley Bennett and Moscow resident and former state senator Louise Reglin.
I want to talk to you about climate change. I don't believe climate change is named in our comprehensive plan. It's been emerging in our consciousness in the years since the plan was adopted. But the plan does make gestures in the directions that climate considerations would point. Over 100 years ago, our city fathers created an industrial corridor through the middle of the city. The railroad and those uses have atrophied. The comprehensive plan recognized that we are in a position to make new choices, and it steers us to increase the density and intensity of use. For years, climate scientists have modeled possible futures including a scenario commonly called business as usual. Business as usual leads to climate disaster. The Paris Accords last December committed the world to finding a new trajectory, a departure from business as usual. Moscow must make its own small contribution to the world's effort. In 2014, the Moscow Citizen Survey included an item asking if the city should include climate change in its planning. Tonight, you are making a decision that will impact land use in the core of Moscow for 50 years or more. In the context of climate change and the Paris Accords, you need to consider the implication of committing to 50 years of business as usual. Your question tonight should be, does this project help Moscow change course, diverge from business as usual, and reduce the community carbon footprint? I already suggested that the comprehensive plan and subsequent supporting actions, such as Legacy Crossing and the UMC Zone, point in the right climate direction, if not by name. That is criteria one in your relevant criteria and standards on which you should base your decision. Criteria six requires you find the project promotes innovative, efficient, and economic use. I think it could be understood to give you climate-related directives. Donald Shoup has published multiple pieces relating to parking and urban design. The most memorable title is The High Cost of Free Parking. My reading of Shoup does not include a climate cost, but I think tonight you can find that current city parking standards encourage driving because they make our city less compact. I think you should applaud this proposal's increase in density because it makes our city more compact, and I think you should approve its reduction in parking in part as part of a climate response above and beyond the fact that it increases the density. If the railroad corridor with its ungainly shape is the legacy of choices 100 years ago, sprawling parking lots and wide streets are likely to be the legacy of our recent past. We need to move beyond them. Staff has noted the proximity of this project to key destinations, the university and downtown. And sitting on the bike path, this project has a well-developed position for non-motorized transportation to support longer trips in town. I'm sure there are those who are startled by the high-rise density and may long for idyllic suburban and rural models. It's time to begin mourning. The suburban sprawl model with its high carbon footprint that was a unique American post-war experiment, fueled by abundant and cheap fossil fuels, has come to an end. It can't be maintained. The sustainable city will be compact, and it will favor other modes of transportation over automobiles. That is pointed to in our city's comprehensive plan, and this project shows us how it could look and the innovative and efficient uses that can move us in the direction away from business as usual and climate disaster.
Shelley Bennett, I was excited when we were able to put together a project on this much long-await piece of property. And, for years we looked at trying to put a senior project or something that people could live in, and the seniors didn't want it because they didn't like the distance across the roads. They wanted something closer to amenities. They don't want to cross the highway. So that this project is perfect for this piece of property. And Nils, I couldn't have heard it better. I couldn't have said it better. So we've wanted a walkable community. We want to encourage kids. I'm not a millennial. I'm a boomer, and I have two cars. My children and their friends don't have as many cars. And like Justin, who works with me, he and his family share a car. Most of my friends' children did not get driver's licenses until they were leaving town, and they did not take cars to college. Arizona State University that my daughter went to years ago, she wanted to take a car, and being the car girl that I am, we paid for her to have a parking spot at the apartment complex that was an off-campus student housing project, just as exactly what they're offering, because she had a car. So I truly believe the parking issue should be the last thing you think about anymore. I think this is a beautiful project. I think the University of Idaho has struggled against their peer institutions because they all have this. This has been built everywhere else. We haven't had anybody with the creativity to look at this piece of property that was more affordable and figure out how to densify it as beautifully as this. It's gorgeous. The economic impact to our community to have this project coming in is significant, and I think we need to look at that. Moscow needs to show some forward motion, and we need to have it be towards the University of Idaho's students, providing amenities that otherwise they don't have. We want the University of Idaho to grow. This has been the answer, and we've been trying for years to get it going, and now we have it offered up. So I would hope that you would move this process along so that we can get him into the place where he has to get in and start cleaning up the soils in which he's working with that he already knows he has to deal with up front. So thank you very much for your time, and I would hope that you would approve this project.
Louise Regalin, 423 Beach Street. I'm in the area of impact. And the concerns that I have are several. One is whether or not ITD, the emergency exit they're talking about having, is really a safety factor. If anybody has driven that area and know that if you come out of there, you're immediately in the right-hand turn lane for the Troy Highway. There's a real issue of safety and whatever. The other thing is I don't think you can put a turn lane in with 12 feet. If you go up the hill, just immediately up the hill from there, and take a look at where the next intersection and light are and do some measurement, I think there's a real safety factor involved. The other is the University of Idaho and Moscow, the students who come here are basically rural to rural. We may regard ourselves as urban, but if you compare ourselves to any size city, we're not. And we live in a state where kids learn to drive whatever, motorcycles, cars, pickup trucks, starting at 12, 13, 14. You can get a driver's license at 14 if you have a need for one. Those people, I think, are going to bring cars to school. My other major concern, and this is my real concern, is where I live, we already have parking problems. I mean, I sometimes have difficulty getting in or out of my own driveway because of the non-residents who are parking. Beach Street is only, how many of you have been on Beach Street? It's really only 2 or 3 blocks long, depending upon how you want to count. And if you look at the adjacent streets, parking is a major issue in our area. To get from this development to our area, you either have to go out and go all the way around or in, or get your feet wet crossing the street. It's not ease of access, but I would hope that you would not consider my neighborhood as a parking reserve for this development simply because it's already overparked. And if I couldn't park my cars off the street, many of my neighbors do not have access to off-street parking. If you drive down the street, you'll notice that. So if you want to look at this neighborhood as a place where people can park their cars, particularly if they plan on leaving them there till they need them on the weekend or whatever, not a solution anywhere in that whole neighborhood.
That was Moscow resident Louise Regalin commenting on the proposed 6-acre high-density planned unit development along U.S. Highway 95 just south of Paradise Creek called Identity on Main. You also heard from the public hearing local realtor Shelley Bennett, and we started with Moscow resident Nils Peterson. Planning and Zoning Commission member Nels Reese had this comment on the proposal before the vote on Wednesday.
This is probably the finest project that we've seen in quite a few years, and I've been sitting here for quite a few years. We don't normally get this kind of quality, and I'm touched by the project. I know the site quite well. You and I both have tried to do projects on this site.
As a matter of fact,
we've had years of fooling around with it with our students, and this is an ungainly site. And this solution is quite remarkable, I believe. I see a few little issues, you know, in terms of turning lanes and paths. But this begins now to set a precedent for the kind of work that we'd like to see in Legacy Crossing, and playing off of Nils Petersen's philosophical presentation, we need to remind people in our Quad City area that projects don't have to look like the apartment houses that we've managed to build fairly constantly over the last 10 years. So this is really bringing a new look. I don't want to say it's going to win a national prize architecturally. This is good architecture, though. I think I know a little bit about it. And it brings a new look. It brings it's at our gateway to the campus and to the town.
That was Moscow Planning and Zoning Commission member Nils Riis. The Moscow Planning and Zoning Commission voted unanimously in favor of the Identity on Main planned unit development on Wednesday. The proposal now goes to the full city council. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Mostly clear skies Saturday through the end of next week. High 72 tomorrow, 82 Sunday, and 88 Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Lows around 47 Saturday night, in the mid-50s Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday night, and around 58 Wednesday night. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach and Scott Jackson assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse, and 90.3 on your FM dial and online.